On Marketing Mavericks, we talk all about the Super Bowl, halftime ads, big data, and the social war room. Coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Marketing Mavericks is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Marketing Mavericks, episode 40, recorded Thursday, January 29th, 2015. The Big Game. Welcome to Marketing Mavericks, where we talk about everything at the intersection of marketing and technology. Today, we're going to talk all about the Super Bowl, the big game. Whether you're a fan or not, we all follow it, whether it's for the advertising or the fun or just to hang out and eat chips with our friends. We're going to talk about the marketing aspect, how fans are connecting, how advertisers use the Super Bowl, whether we like their ads or whether we don't. And we have two pretty fantastic guests. We have a return guest, Brian Rich, who's the founder of Little M Media. Hi, Brian.
Nice to see you again.
I just can't. I'm going to be giggling the whole show about that hat. If you're not watching, you're missing out. This is awesome.
It's a Seahawks hat.
Yeah.
I can remove it if it's distracting. My allegiance will be clear.
Oh, no. Please don't.
Okay.
Yeah, your allegiance
is with
the Hawks.
If it gets too warm, I'll have to.
There's no question. Your allegiance is with the Hawks. So nobody's going to question that, brother. Live in the moment.
That's right. Go Hawks. Call us.
We also have Don Povia, who is with us. And Don, I just realized I don't have your title in front of me. What is it that you do? You're the Transition Sports and Entertainment founder or director?
Yeah, I'm a co-founder. I'm a managing director. One of our partners is Keith Bullock, who was a three-time All-Pro with the Tennessee Titans. So we have some good perspective there, I think, on this topic, both from my background, my partner's background, and happy to be here. Thank you.
Absolutely. And you got little Benny behind you.
Yeah, Benny the Bull.
Benny needs a lower third. And we have Anthony Nielsen at the control tower. Hello, Anthony.
Hey, how's it going?
Now, last weekend, you didn't go skiing. You went hiking, which you were very clear to say, not a snowboarder or a skier.
Well, there wasn't any snow, so.
Anything exciting happening this week? Did you bring the pup in with you today?
Yeah. Well, he's in my office right now, but I have the foster dog with me.
Oh, Anthony fosters animals. Isn't that the most awesome thing you've ever heard of?
I love it. It's where I get my cats. I think it's so much better. I've rescued three cats. So sorry for all the dog people out there. But there's so much better having kids and having a family, knowing what you're getting. I feel so many people adopt animals and they haven't gone through the foster process. And it's a bad fit for everyone. So I really appreciate what you do, Anthony, as an animal lover on my side.
Well, thank you.
Anthony.
I have a lot of animal stuffed animals. Not no living ones, but with our kids, a lot of stuffed
this
animals.
This is not one of the animals that I
Benny the Bull.
Forget him.
We're going to talk about puppies today. We're going to talk about some Super Bowl ads. Some were a hit, some were already a miss, and some do we really need to see over and over again? And I was a little bit of it. There was one that was a bit of a tearjerker. But lots of conversation. You guys are, the... what I would consider in my network, certainly two of the most prominent people in the space of marketing and advertising as it relates to sports, specifically today, the Super Bowl, the big game, at least as it were here in the United States, and people follow abroad as well. What are the big topics this year besides the team themselves? What do you think, Brian?
Well, I always come at the Super Bowl from the fan perspective. So there's all these on-field conversations, which team has better strategy, players. There have been some off-field conversations and controversies, who's getting fined for what. But, to me, what's wonderful about the Super Bowl is the fact that it is the largest, most watched televised event. It is an incredible laboratory for media and how they present the game. And this year, for the first time ever, they're streaming the game. So you can watch it on your phone for free. That's a very big deal. It's a laboratory for obviously marketing and advertising. The ads that are shown during the game, but also what we learn about how audiences interact with advertising going forward. And, you know, even for music, I mean, the halftime show is as big a platform for an artist, you know, as any out there. And we saw an emerging artist, if you will, sort of Bruno Mars last year, you know, who was the act at the Super Bowl. You know, I think it was 180% uptick in sales of his album after his performance. Now we've got Katy Perry, who, you know, is arguably a bridge for someone like the NFL and for NBC to a younger and female audience. You know, let's see what they come up with from a show standpoint, and you know, and what we learn from that. So it's just it's from a fan and the experience of the fans perspective, it's just a really exciting sort of laboratory for learning and trying to figure out all of this you know, stuff that we might do in the years to come.
What say you, Don? What's on your radar for the Super Bowl this year?
Sure, it's nice to see, as Brian indicated, just the embracing of new technology, whether it's streaming or not. I think it was with the 2014 Sochi Olympics where there was argument about whether or not people could be tweeting pictures or sending pictures, and it was like trying to stop waves. And to finally be embracing a lot of these technologies, I think in a lot of cases a couple years too late, is nice to see. From a, you know, social fan perspective, it's just it's a circus. You've seen it with Media Day, you've seen it in the lead up. We've been talking about the same things, I feel, for 2 weeks. The fans certainly get a show, whether it's commercials, the game itself, which is nice, but it brings everyone together, whether they're sports fans, music fans, or, you know, just the community. It's an event, but like everything with the NFL, it's also part of this well-oiled machine, for better or for worse. I mean, the league has gotten a lot of criticisms for a lot of things that they've done, particularly this last season, but it is such a corporate giant, and, you know, the Super Bowl is their main stage for the things that they do.
A lot of advertising dollars spent during the Super Bowl. There always has been, and certainly get more so over the years, combined with social media dollars. And then there's some boycotting of some advertisers so that everybody can participate. And certainly Twitter has their own, you know, realm of advertisers that they work with. They call their war room, and not everybody can play the game. Facebook just had a big announcement that they want to capitalize on the Super Bowl and advertisers. I don't know if you guys are following them, but Facebook wants to sell real-time Super Bowl ads, basically taking on their big competitor, I think, during big events, not just sports, but certainly sports as well. And they want to take on Twitter. What do you guys think about that? Brian, have you paid much attention to the new Facebook announcement?
Yeah, I mean, I have been waiting for Facebook to show the kind of sophistication that I know or believe has been available inside. And I think an event like the Super Bowl, you know, really creates this sort of wonderful opportunity for them to roll that out. You know, the question for me, and this is true across all the advertising, is, you know, what are we going to learn, or what are we going to see from the way Facebook covers this Super Bowl that reflects that they understand, you know, marketing or engagement in real time? So yes, the ability to do it is there, the technical capacity is there, but is the creative, the storytelling, the ability to motivate people to go and take whatever action you want them to take, buy something or sign up, is that there? Because what I find very interesting with marketing and social around the Super Bowl every year, and now it's been, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years where, you know, the digital and the mobile and the social have really been part of the conversation around the Super Bowl. The thing that I always find so fascinating is how little the creative has actually evolved, how little advantage these brands and these marketers take advantage of the different platforms. They're telling the same story across different platforms, but they're not really, you know, doing a whole lot that's super interesting and sophisticated in terms of telling stories in dramatically different ways. So Facebook, new entrant, has understood, I think, a lot of things about the way we connect as human beings and what we want. We saw it with the presidential inaugural. We've seen it with, you know, some of the sort of disaster response and things they've done. You know, can they in fact live up or help us live up to the idea of a truly social Super Bowl? That's, I don't know. I'm hopeful, but I don't know.
I like that.
I think you've hit the nail on the head. It's also so congested, and there's so many advertisers, marketers vying for those eyeballs that they know are there. that you really need something creative or disruptive to cut through that clutter, and clutter it is. So the creative, I think, is really what's going to tell the difference. The platforms are there. They've always been there. The people are there. The technology and the targeting to reach those people are there. But when you have everybody screaming in the same direction, how are you going to sort of break through and get that message across? When you're at the Super Bowl, when you're at the NBA All-Star game, which is, you know, a week after, it's the same thing. Everybody knows they need to activate there, and they try to bring their A game, but you're competing against everybody else's A game as well. And I think a lot of it just gets lost. So who can creatively use these platforms to get that message across is the ones that's going to stand out and be most resourceful with their money. They're spending a lot of money on this to just throw it up in the wind.
$66 billion, in fact, is spent on Super Bowl advertising. And in general, that's a lot of money for you guys saying that they're actually not being creative and innovative, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the reality. I mean, to me, the measure of success coming out of something like the Super Bowl cannot be awareness alone. It has to be a measurable lift in, you know, direct sales or, you know, a deeper commitment among fans of your brand or whatever it is. And, you know, I'm sure that there is a reasonable ROI. I don't think people would continue to advertise and spend this kind of money and try and figure these things out if there wasn't something that they were seeing, brand lift or direct sales or whatever. But, you know, I would be very interested to hear someone actually explain that they have a roadmap, that they have some path that says we're going to air this ad on the Super Bowl and that's going to drive people to this site, and we're going to capture their email address or we're going to capture their mobile address, and then we're going to do X, Y, and Z, and that's going to result in, you know, our soda being purchased or whatever. Because absent of that, you know, the prices for the advertising can continue to go up, the audience can continue to grow, and, you know, we're not actually going to evolve the market, the industries that are all involved in this. The best one, and this is why music to me is probably the most interesting thing at the Super Bowl, there has been a very clear direct mechanism for people who saw Bruno Mars perform and then went on iTunes and bought the song literally while the halftime show was still happening. Like, if that does not tell you that playing the halftime show and obviously playing it well improves your standing as an artist or your viability as a musician or whatever, you know, I don't know what does. I don't see how we've connected the same thing to, you know, to a lot of the brands and the way that they advertise. And maybe if, you know, Amazon, you know, advertised products and said, I want you to buy this book, and we saw a big, you know, all those books sell out, that would be some evidence, but no one approaches it that way. So we have more to play around with.
I think the default there has been hashtag. We'll throw a hashtag out there and people will use it, and then we'll measure how many times this hashtag is tweeted. But to your point, that doesn't mean that people are going to the site and taking action and purchasing based on what these advertisers are doing. And I don't want to say it's lazy, but talk about creativity again. I mean, one that does come to mind that was sort of, I want to say it was successful, was Esurance last year, where it was, you know, hashtag this and win, you know, the $1.5 million that we're saving by doing the commercial immediately after the Super Bowl. Okay, that was creative in itself, and that was a story and something that they could push. They used the hashtag to drive people, but how many people signed up for Esurance, or how many people just tweeted the hashtag to try to win $1.5 million? So it's connecting those, you know, actual sales objectives with the marketing strategies. I'd love to see more data on it, but to Brian's point, if they keep doing it, something must be doing it right, or are they just measuring impressions? Because, you know, everybody measures everything differently.
That's exactly true. Everybody does measure differently. So to determine what's working, in fact, the controversy, I think, this year, I've read a few articles on that. Should brands really advertise in the Super Bowl if they aren't doing anything different, if they aren't launching a new product, for example? Are we going to buy more Anheuser-Busch just because they spend a lot of money? Doritos, we're already buying. GoDaddy, I mean, some of these brands actually advertise every year. They spend a lot of money, but is it really moving the needle for them? Or are we going to still buy their products?
Well, I think it also goes to the objective. For GoDaddy, when they first launched, you know, their commercials, the cheeky, you know, sex sells type thing a couple years ago, nobody had ever heard of GoDaddy. They spent all the money. They did something that was risque, provocative, and it was about brand awareness. So, you know, I think for certain ones like that, Esurance the same way. It was about brand awareness, but was it, you know, moving the needle on sales? So, again, it's not just how we're measuring, but what we're measuring, what our objectives are. So, you know, if somebody with GoDaddy, who we mentioned, Esurance, is like that. Yeah, so you're going to get how many millions and tens of millions of people seeing this and knowing about your brand. Hopefully, if it's a, you know, a good enough commercial, they'll remember what that was. But yeah, I think the objectives come into play as well.
Okay. I hate to say this, but I'm going to, and it's so boring, but we still talk about that cookie, right? You know, the one with the cookie on the outside and the cream in the middle and then the real time advertising that they did, you know, a few years ago, but nothing really exciting has happened since then. Okay, it's Oreo mouths out there. Is anything going to happen? Is anybody be able to capitalize on some real time hits like that was, or is that over?
So I read an article. I don't know if you saw this. I think it was this morning that 13. It's either somewhere above north of 10 and fewer than 20 brands, companies have set up war rooms this year, right, to take advantage of the real-time marketing, you know, opportunity that, you know, they believe exists. Now, you know, the interesting thing about Oreo in that case, I think, was their willingness, their permission from the overlords to push that boundary. They have, you know, they were able to push that boundary because that was the whole idea of the war room from them from the beginning. I mean, they did stuff to support gay rights. They did stuff or equality. You know, they did all sorts of content over the course of months and months. The Super Bowl just happened to be one of them. And obviously the lights out gift, you know, was handed to them. For all these brands that have a real time functionality, that have a war room, but don't have the permission or the appetite to, you know, to go there with the messaging or go there with the relevancy, you know, no, they're not going to take advantage. It's that you have to be that much more in tune, that much more intelligent as a brand. It's not just execution. It is also about, you know, resonance.
That's exactly it right there. You stole my point, is the fact that brands should and could be doing this. One of my frustrations when I dip my toe into sort of the PR agency world is that, you know, as a digital strategist or whatever you want to call that, you have this digital team sort of separate from your general teams over here. And the digital team is, okay, come up with a Facebook strategy once we come up with the big idea. Not recognizing the fact that PR, the first window into a brand is digital media, is social media, is website, is SEO and Google. And it gets ignored, I think, by the brand handlers, by the agencies that are representing them, and it's really a disservice to them. You need to trust the people that you're putting your brands in the hands of. To Oreo's credit, to Brian's point, is that they were allowed to activate that way instead of having to go through 10 channels of approvals for messaging, content, etc. It's here's the keys, we trust you, do it. And to his other point, is that they did it beyond the Super Bowl. I think that was a great thing, is that it got the attention for the Super Bowl, but a good brand is going to have that kind of team and that kind of reaction and that interaction. And that's what social media is. It's about conversation, not about just push, push, push. And I think that was part of it. They were inserting themselves into an ongoing theme, conversation, something that was happening in real time without having to jump, being necessitated by their brand relationship to have to jump through the hoops to actually get that done. And I think you hit the nail on the head. And I think it's one of my biggest frustrations that I see when I work on the brand end, is not being able to activate and react really in real time and have a normal conversation and insert yourself the way you should, the way you want to, the way social media is set up for in real time.
So let's talk about Twitter war rooms for a minute. There are certain brands, I think, I'm trying to remember exactly how many that there are that Twitter has partnered with to help promote during the Super Bowl. So there are people that can actually do work on creative and come up with messaging actually during the show. They've got lawyers standing by to approve these ads so that they can actually jump in with some real-time creative and real-time advertising. But they corner the market. So like, for example, Anheuser-Busch, if you're Heineken, in Newcastle, you're not really able to participate. So they try to come up with an alternative to capturing on the hashtag movement and capturing on social media. What do you think about that? Just Twitter alien, you know, I wouldn't say they alienate, it's their business, but they partnering and then excluding maybe similar brands in the same vertical.
Well, money talks. I mean, this is business. I mean, it's an advertising business. It's marketing business. The NFL is a multi-billion-dollar business. And, you know, they're paying for real estate. When we talked about Facebook setting up these platforms and now Twitter, it's just sellable real estate that they are putting out to their marketers. It's another way for them to monetize the platforms. And the sad thing is, for the most part, just like the commercials on television, the commercials on social, money talks. And it's really an arms race. Who has the most money to get that message out there the best? So, I can't say I fault them for that, but, you know, it kind of goes back to that disruption. And I can think of a handful of ways that, that, you know, you can kind of circumvent that. And certainly I think there is some benefit to not being an official sponsor of the league or of the team. You have to dance around a certain way, but you're also not restricted by some of the guidelines that they give you. So you can be a little more creative, but you're going up against those, you know, those tens of millions of dollars that is just being shoved in people's faces.
We've seen Ford spend a lot of money on Super Bowl combined with social media. We've seen Toyota do it, certainly automotive in general. But some of the advertisers are backing out of Super Bowl this year and focusing strictly on social strategies. Is that a smart play, or is the combined traditional tactic the best?
Well, look, I mean, I think if you take a very sort of narrow, linear view of the world, then a marketer can make the case that, you know, being digital only, being social only makes sense because there's plenty of data out there that suggests that is the primary way that people are getting information, that they're connecting with their friends, that they're it's certainly the primary place that we're going to be able to see people talking about the Super Bowl, which is not to say that all of those you know, parties that are happening and offline conversations that are occurring you know, aren't occurring. It just, we can't track them and we can't insert ourselves into them from a brand or advertising standpoint. But I think what's more important to remember is we're talking about influencing the way human beings think and the actions that they take in relation to brands. And, you know, there is no evidence to suggest that just reaching someone on social is going to result in any sort of other action, particularly not some sort of substantial, meaningful action that occurs offline. So I think it is very risky for a brand to not look at all the channels and look at all the kind of compelling ways that you can engage with someone who's watching the game or even intentionally who's not watching the game and go for that audience with a combination of television plus digital plus social plus, you know, in-store, et cetera, et cetera. I think the reality, though, is that you know, it's a battle of agencies. It's a battle of departments within these companies. And one group takes care of television advertising and another group takes care of digital and social a lot of the times. And, you know, if those two agencies that work for a brand get into a battle with each other, you know, they're not necessarily interested in advancing the brand. They're interested in advancing the agency. And so if the digital agency makes a better case that TV's not giving you the ROI because digital is so much more measurable, then they're going to get the spend instead of on television. And I just think, you know, we're thinking about a lot of this the wrong way. You know, 110 million plus people are going to tune in to watch the Super Bowl. You know, you're not going to get 110 million people on Twitter. You're not going to get 110 million people on Facebook to pay attention to one thing. So take advantage of the fact that the television will give you that shared experience across everybody, and then look at all of the ways that digital and social and offline and everything else can support, you know, whatever the next set of actions are, you know, and go there. TV alone won't do it, but either will digital alone.
Well, I think back to the original point too. It's also a microcosm of just advertising in general with shifting TV dollars to digital for the reasons that Brian outlined. But, you know, the Super Bowl, it's just, you know, on, excuse the expression, on steroids. But it's no different than what we're seeing.
Overinflated, I think, is this year's version of
overinflated. We'll get to that in a minute.
But yeah, I think it's really, you know, it's reflective of just sort of society in general and what we're seeing when it's not Super Bowl time. It's you know, it's a mixed pot now. You have to play on all the fields and the multimedia platforms that are available. TV, to Brian's point, is still the big one. You know, Brian and I both have a bit of a political background, and you know, one thing I always think of is with TV commercials, you watch around election time and it's just thrown at you. There's so many people, you don't even know who the commercials are for anymore. Or if you look at something with direct mail, you at least know whose mailbox you're getting into. So at least for that brief second when they're picking up their mail, they know what they're getting. I think digital is very similar. There's so much data out there. There's so much targeting that's done, you know, from a, not only your ROI perspective, but just getting it, you know, in the hands of people that you know you want to get it in the hands of, particularly with Facebook, that's there too. So I think it's a shift, but it's a shift that's reflective of sort of an evergreen, you know, an evergreen time period that we're seeing overinflated at the Super Bowl. But digital also gives you the opportunity to know exactly who your audience is, just instead of throwing it at 100 million people or 110 million people that are going to be watching the game.
Let's talk about inflation or deflation, if you will, and deflate gate. I mean, is a scandal also part of the marketing play? We saw some brands actually jump all over deflate gate. And I think it was like Krispy Kreme, and there were a few others that actually Downey was one of them that jumped on with some tweets and got some traction. Is that really a strategy? Is that a play? I mean, should they try to jump across some controversial topics, speaking of politics, and try to make some sort of marketing move out of it?
I can't say no, because for a brand or an organization that doesn't have any traction, doesn't have any awareness, it's not going to come to you organically. So take advantage of something that is given to you. And certainly, you know, the Deflategate or Balghazi or whatever you want to call it has you know, consumed enough of the media conversation and sort of the extended fan conversation that there is an in. There is this invitation for someone in there and make light of it or whatever. I actually look at it, though, from the other perspective, which is, you know, the whole controversy about whether or not Tom Brady and the Patriots, you know, broke the rules, et cetera, should be evidence to any brand out there the importance of being involved in the conversation and having something to say and dealing with it, because the brand of the NBA, of the NFL, is the one that's actually being significantly affected by this, partly because it's on the heels of the domestic violence you know, conversation that has come up at various points during the season, and, you know, partly because there's so much money and so much energy and time invested in the NFL that fans want to know that what they're spending their time on and what they're investing their money in is not, you know, is not bad and, you know, disingenuous and, you know, fixed or whatever. So the fact that the NFL has not handled the inflation gate issue very well, I actually think is very telling. And forget about it for the NFL, but look at all the brands and having them not realize that this is, you know, the textbook case of how not to handle even a seemingly small or inane crisis. Look at Tom Brady's credibility. Look at Bill Belichick's credibility, you know, damaged. Now, maybe they were already damaged. Maybe they weren't, whatever. But, you know, brand is about experience. Brand is shaped every day. And your willingness to be a fan or spend money or whatever down the line is going to be influenced by what people are seeing today. And, you know, inflation game may have been fun for some brands to get a short-term lift. But, you know, I think a year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, you know, we might be able to draw a line back and see that the NFL dipped a bit because, you know, over and over again, they just did not understand what fans really wanted and they failed to address it properly. And this is one of those examples.
I think that's an excellent point. In fact, if you think about last year with Sherman and all that controversy that he went through on a personal brand and had how he had to defend himself after the Super Bowl and it was a big deal and or after the game. And then you see Deflategate and you see somebody like Tom Brady, his brand, or just New England in general. What's the impact of the NFL's brand or the player's brand? Do we stop buying their products?
Well, I think Sherman made out quite well. I mean, he leveraged that. It's all competitive, whether you look at Richard Sherman running his mouth or Tom Brady, you know, looking for an advantage on the football field. I think that we talk about controversy, and these are very mundane controversies compared to some of the more serious stuff that the NFL went through earlier in the year. But I think that the good ones, the smart ones, are able to leverage that. And Richard Sherman right away gets a Beats Audio endorsement. He's been on Nike commercials. He got Monday Morning Quarterback with SI have him as a contributor. So he's smart enough, he's intelligent enough that and he's good enough, he can back up what he says on the field. Same thing like this year, I'm getting a little tired of Marshawn Lynch's act, to be quite honest. Sorry, Brian. But, you know, it was cute at first, and now it's just like, oh, come on, give it up, dude. But you know, then you see a Skittles commercial and it's something else. He just did another commercial. So these guys, by, you know, going a little outside the box, showing their real personality, I think it is their real personalities. I don't think it's contrived. They're able to leverage that brand, similar to how Tom Brady did as sort of this wholesome all-American boy, in a way that it is, you know, reflective of brands that, that want to be involved. So I don't think it's a bad thing when you talk about these things. Now, when you talk about Balghazi or Deflategate, I think that's a little different because, you know, there's roles involved. It's not the competitive spirit of a guy. It's literally, you know, are you cheating to take advantage? And you didn't need to. You blew the team away by how many points in the AFC Championship game? You're one of the greatest quarterbacks, coaches, and franchise, you know, at least in the last two decades. You know, what are you doing and why are you doing it? I think, you know, what Brian said earlier is the NFL, this is all going to come back on them. We've been talking about this Deflategate for 2 weeks now. It's all we're talking about. And I don't think it's going to go away after the game. So, you know, I think if you're smart, if you're competitive, you're fair, you can use those things to your advantage. If you toe the wrong side of that line, I think that it hurts you in the long run. But I think everybody's going to be fine.
Marshawn Lynch, you mentioned him a second ago, and he's definitely in the news the last couple of days for his non-press conference. You know, I don't want to be fined. Is it up to the players to really have some sort of public persona, be able to speak to the press? I mean, should they be held to that standard, or should we only expect them to play football and as marketers not really expect us to talk to them or the press?
It's a job. I mean, they have an employment contract. There are certain obligations. I'm sure everyone who signs an employee contract would like to do certain things and not do certain things. So whether he wants to say, my job is to play football, yes, but you're a contracted employee who's, you know, by accepting this contract to play the game that you're going to play, there's certain obligations that you need to meet. Now, at first it was, hey, I'm shy. This is my personality. I don't want to do it. And I thought it was kind of humble at first. But now when you see him sort of taking advantage of the advertising dollars and really the circus show that's going around, you're so shy, but now you're the biggest attraction at Super Bowl week this week. So it kind of muffles his message to me quite a bit. But I'm sure any employee out there has certain things they would and wouldn't like to do, but by accepting employment, there's certain things that you need to do that you're contracted to do.
So I like Russell Wilson. Oh, go ahead, Brian.
No, and I was just going to say, I mean, I think the larger issue with the Marshawn Lynch thing, and I don't disagree, it was funny, it gets tiring, you know, I care about him more as an athlete, I really don't care that much about, you know, what happens off the court, off the field, we've seen it with, you know, the Spurs head coach, and he doesn't like to give interviews, and everyone has fun with that. The thing that frustrates me is, you know, the National Football League and the media that covers him love Marshawn Lynch when he breaks a big run down the field, but, you know, doesn't like it when he shows a little bit of attitude and grabs his crotch, right? They love the, you know, crotch grab when they're selling a picture of it in the NFL store, which they did this week, and then they took down after they got called on it, you know, but now they're going to fine him. I think it was a mistake, but the point is like, they don't know what they're doing. They don't know what to do with it. So, yeah. You know, we're ping-ponging back and forth. And if the NFL is so smart and so sophisticated and has built up this incredible brand, then you either have to embrace the fact that part of your brand is built on these insane personalities and these inane personalities and what they do. And that's why people tune in and talk. And there's 2 weeks before the big game. And what the hell are we supposed to do at that time? You know, right. And partly it's how does the NFL maximize it and leverage it, you know, themselves? So it's like, you know, either right. let Think it go and be okay too. With it or, you know, clamp it down, but stop being inconsistent because you're not, you know, really paying attention and you kind of want both sides of it.
I think I heard this on sports radio and it was a great point this morning listening. These are the same guys, you know, Richard Sherman is going to have Fox, ESPN, NBC, everyone lined up as soon as he retires. You know, Marshawn Lynch is going to have similar opportunities. Look at Randy Moss was the same way, right? Randy Moss was such a bad guy, but now he's actually really good with Fox Sports One. You know, Ray Lewis, certainly no angel there, had a job waiting for him before he even retired. So, you know, these personalities, going back to that branding part, which is something I'm very passionate about in sort of the after career, is that those guys that show that personality, that have an opinion in this, you know, sports news world that we live in, they're the first ones that have jobs lined up for them when they're done playing.
I think Richard Sherman is a great example of that. I mean, you got Russell Wilson, like looking at the Seahawks specifically, you've got Russell Wilson who plays the good guy. He's getting a lot of endorsements. He's doing a great job. And then you've got his polar personality opposite. You've got Sherman, who, you know, Anthony's pulled up his website here where he's got his own site and his own clothing line. I mean, he's monetizing his brand for sure. These are smart guys. They know what they're doing. They're business people. It's the personal brand and the business that they're creating outside of the game. I mean, we're obviously buying into it, literally.
For sure. And I mean, I think the other thing is it's just football. It's just a sport. You know, Tom Brady got a little flack for saying, look, this isn't ISIS, but he's kind of right. Like these guys are just playing a sport. And a guy like Richard Sherman, I hated him when he played the Eagles and started talking a lot of crap this year. But last year I was like, yeah, this guy's great. It's entertainment. And Johnny Manziel is another guy. It's like, who cares? Like, if I was a Browns fan, I would care, but you know, this guy's out there being an entertainer, and I'm okay with that.
Well, and remember that the average NFL career is, you know,
three years,
right? You're lucky if you make seven or something like that. So if you don't, you know, A, perform on the field, and B, maximize every off-field opportunity, then, you know, you've spent your entire young adult life leading up to a point where, you know, you could be literally broke and broken and – you know, et cetera. So who knows? I mean, Richard Sherman injured his elbow in the NFC Championship game. He seems to be fine. I'm sure he'll play great. But that's how quickly it can happen, is one, you know, inadvertent run-in with a camera on the sidelines could end this guy's career. And, you know, he walks away with nothing. So every moment in sports, on the field and off the field, is something that, you know, needs to be maximized. I actually think it's very, you know, I actually look at the way that a lot of these players have built their brands and how much more sophisticated they are in their thinking than a lot of the brands that advertise around these games, in terms of realizing what kind of moments the game creates and, you know, how that works. I mean, I never see a beer commercial, you know, after a really, like when the Seahawks Packers game went into overtime, where was the beer commercial in real time that was like, anyone else need a beer? Because that was incredibly stressful. You know, like that would be contextually relevant and kind of funny at the same time. And I might go, yeah, you know what? I need a beer. Crap, I better run out and buy some Budweiser or Heineken or whatever. Like, they don't even think like that. They've baked up their brand in a conference room, you know, weeks, months before, you know, and these athletes, their brand is being, you know,
well, that's
figured
exactly,
out sort of every day, every week.
That's exactly what, you know, Keith and I set out to do when we started this company, Transition down there, was the fact that no one is looking out for their sort of long-term, you know, their long-term life, their livelihood. I mean, they're retired. Yeah, 3 years is the average, but after eight, you're lucky to play eight, but then you're 30 years old, retired. Hopefully you kept some of your money, but probably not. The problem is that the people that are around them, you just mentioned these teams that are building up these brands in boardrooms. Players don't have that, but players have more influence and a bigger audience than most of these brands have. And it's finding somebody to sort of concentrate on developing them while they have the spotlight of the NFL or the NBA or whatever the sport might be, is that you put that jersey on, you have an inherent fan base. You probably, if you played football, you played college football somewhere. You might be terrible in the NFL, but you were probably an all-pro or one of the best players to ever come out of your school. How do you take advantage of the alumni and build your brand and connect to the community back there? No one's thinking like this, except for me, hopefully. But to your point, these guys need teams, or at least need somebody caring for them beyond that next check, which, you know, the agent can, you know, take his 2% and worry about the next contract. But once that guy's gone, they're replacing him with the next crop of draft picks that are coming in. These guys are interchangeable, and I don't think while they're playing, they realize that. And it's somewhat sad, I think.
Okay, I have to find out. It's obvious, Brian, that you're a Seahawks fan. I mean, anybody that's watching this is probably getting a little bit of a chuckle because I love that cap. That's, you know, you're styling.
Thank you.
He must be freezing, though. He's got the fleece on.
No, I'm like burning up now because I'm wearing the hat.
He looks awesome. So, Don, who are you favoriting for the Super Bowl?
I think you can go either way. I think the Pats are going to pull it out, though. And with that is going to come the criticism of that team. I just think they're going to be pretty well prepared. It's you know it's very hard to repeat. You know, the Seahawks aren't necessarily sneaking up on anyone. I think, you know, they have a great running game. Their passing game does what it needs to do. But I think that the Pats are probably as good an all around team. I haven't followed either of these teams all year, but just from my armchair, I'm going to go with the Pats.
Okay, well, you know, I'm for the Seahawks. What can I say? That's that month I spent in January last year in Seattle. I'm one over. And I was moving from Colorado, so I'm glad to see them.
I just want to say Don is incredibly smart in so many ways.
Not this one?
I think it speaks for itself, but I don't want that comment to reflect in any way on everything else that you've both accomplished in your career and, you know,
burn.
Knowing you personally that, you know, will be a very fruitful and productive life to come. Burn. I just don't want anyone to take away the wrong impression.
Well, Brian, you know, I'm a bitter Philadelphia sports fan. So, you know, but the Pats beat us in the Super Bowl. I should hate everyone in this game.
I thought that's what Eagles fans did.
Yeah, kind of.
So,
Brian, you survived the link this year, didn't you?
I did. I went and watched, and it was touch and go. Although by the end of the game, because the Seahawks were winning so well, the Seahawks fans almost outnumbered the Eagles fans that were remaining. So, I will say this: I can't. You know, I have been a Seahawks fan my entire life, born and raised. You know, the early years of my fandom were just awful and painfully depressing. You know, our quarterback, Dave Craig, at one point, you know, had the most fumbles and the highest fumble percentage of any quarterback in NFL history. You know, like every team has its ups and downs. And so this is a great time for me, and I can be joking about, you know, you should or shouldn't, you know, like a team, et cetera. But, you know, we'll all have our comeuppance at some point if we're not careful. So you gotta be a good fan, you know, and realize that, you know, who knows what happens. I mean, there were a lot of people trash talking last year about the Broncos, and we know how that turned out, and nobody expected a massive blowout by the Seahawks over the Broncos. You know, so I joke and I play, but, you know, these games are so close. These teams are so good. These coaches are so well matched. You know, I have to have confidence that the Seahawks will win, because otherwise I couldn't get out of bed in the morning and watch the game. But, you know, this one's actually incredibly hard to call. And if you take the Seahawks Packers game in the NFC Championship, like at halftime, you know, you did not want to talk to me at halftime. It was not pretty at all. And of course, by the end of the day, I was like, you know, clairvoyant, because I was a Seahawks fan and knew that we would pull it out. Like, you know, it's a funny game that way.
Just talk a little bit about, you know, fandom and lifetime fandom. I'm in Central New Jersey, so I get both New York and Philadelphia media markets. I'm literally right on the line that separates North Jersey and South Jersey. So I get two Foxes. I get, you know, Philadelphia Fox, New York Fox. I get Philadelphia CBS, New York CBS. But along with the great media that we get there, we also have very mixed fans. So half the fans are Giants and Yankees fans. Half the fans are Eagles and Phillies fans. And then they sort of cross-pollinate one another too. I have friends that are Eagles fans and Yankees fans. But as sort of Philadelphia through and through, just the abuse that I've taken, you know, my entire life is just, I like to say to people now, you can't throw anything at me that I haven't heard like my entire life. So make fun of me if you want. I'm still rolling with it.
So, well, look, and none of us are Browns fans, so we're all good there. Well,
and I'm just glad the Cowboys lost.
Hey, you know, we can all agree on that, can't we?
On that
throw a common point in there. I figure we could all agree on that point.
On that trash-talking note, speaking of trash-talking and advertisers and some of the brands that are really either very successful because we like the bad boys in advertising or not, some you like, but definitely they're making money. There was an ad, T-Mobile and Kim Kardashian partnered up. Kim Kardashian made fun of herself. This is a kind of pre-leaked Super Bowl ad where Kim Kardashian in her perfect self is talking about selfies and that sort of thing. And T-Mobile, you've got the CEO of T-Mobile promoting it, John Leisure. What do you think about this? Is this the kind of stuff that makes us want to switch over to T-Mobile? And then, of course, you know, they're all pre-leaked ads, right?
My
You know, I think the winner in that is Kim Kardashian. In all seriousness, like, good for T-Mobile and whatever money they spent to put together an ad that I think is very creative, right, and totally taps into, you know, the kind of broad populist view of Kim Kardashian and her brand. But no, it motivates me in absolutely no way, and nobody who I've talked to or know motivates them in absolutely no way to become a T-Mobile, you know, subscriber or user. But it does actually make me a little bit it makes me like Kim Kardashian a little bit more, right? It shows me that Kim Kardashian, this incredibly sophisticated brand building individual, you know, can make fun of herself a little, the same way Peyton Manning did, you know, with his stuff on Saturday Night Live and his rap with Eli for DirecTV. None of those things made me want to buy the product, but it did make me like Peyton Manning. It did help me understand his personality a little bit more. And that, you know, so I think it's the win here is for Kim Kardashian and her team for getting signed to that ad. And the question is, you know, why can't T-Mobile, who's trying to sell a phone or a phone service, you know, create some sort of connection between me and the product instead of trying to, you know, sort of skim off the top of someone else's brand like Kim Kardashian?
Shouldn't they have tried to tie that into Deflategate? I don't know.
I see what you did there. I mean, well, one of the other things is you talk about the leaks of the Super Bowl ads. I mean, that's just to get the most – you're spending so much money on this talent and everything else, and we want to get people talking about it. And here we are talking about it, and it looked like – I don't know, was that Gawker or someone that you had the advertisement already up on it? That's why they use people like that too. I think they feel like they're getting – you know, I don't know, like Brian said, if it's driving people to buy the product, but they're getting the most bang for their buck for the piece that they're actually putting out by using these people they know – folks are going to talk about.
So more things that people have been talking about. Advertising still kind of, you know, there's only a few commercials that people are talking about, but it's, we talked about this at the top of the show, Anthony Nielsen with his foster puppy. Puppies are the big conversation. We love puppies and kittens on social media, and certainly a controversial ad that came out that was pre-leaked was the GoDaddy. I mean, they're not afraid to be controversial, but Did this ad with the puppy this year, was that intentionally controversial? Or do you think they were really trying to copy that play on your heart angle that a lot of the other ads and agencies play on? What say ye? Was this intentional bad or was this accidental?
I think they tried to be creative, and it's a very thin line between creative and not creative. And they, you know, found themselves on the wrong side of the line. The credit here, though, the attention here should actually go to the animal rights folks who saw an opportunity to put their issue, you know, in front of everyone when they don't get a lot of those opportunities. It is not an issue that's on the front page of the papers every day, you know, and did that. I mean, it's the same, and I can't remember what year it was, but, you know, there was the you know, a few years ago when CBS refused to run an ad because it violated their standards policy, you know, and that organization, I think it was an abortion related thing, whatever it was, that organization got, you know, its issue discussed by every media source for, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 days without having to spend the money, without having to, you know, justify the costs. And so I think, you know what, you know, GoDaddy got out of it what it needed to get out of it, which was, you know, people talking about GoDaddy. Clearly they're not all that concerned about whether people like them or don't like them, and it has not seemed to dramatically affect their sales over time. But, you know, bully on the animal rights folks who, you know, managed to capture a little bit of the vibe there, the zeitgeist there for a couple of days, and, you know, hopefully they turned it into something that's useful for them, names, dollars, you know, whatever.
Benny the Bull, you going to chime in on this one?
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel that all publicity is good publicity. I think that could be detrimental, very similar to the Patriots situation with Deflategate. You know, we're talking about it, but that doesn't make it positive for them. So, you know, I think there's a very fine line. And why risk it? You know, it might not affect you, but it might. In this case, it might not. But I wouldn't take the risk if you didn't have to. So I have to believe it was unintentional because I can't see you taking the risk, especially, I mean, look at the NFL, talk about some of the issues. I mean, Michael Vick and everything, we're not too far away. And just the outrage that, you know, that people saw over that, and he still faces. I was at a Super Bowl party last year in New York, and people started throwing like dog biscuits at him.
What?
Like, yeah, at Michael Vick. I mean, he's got people that still follow him around because of that. So, yeah, not all, you know, I'm looking at history here, kind of going on a tangent, but, you know, I don't think all publicity is necessarily good publicity. So why, you know, why chance something, you know, uber risky like that, you know, whether it's abortion or puppy mills,
right.
I would stay away from those.
There's a lot of controversial topics, and that's a whole nother show on, you know, spousal abuse and that sort of thing. But anyway, on a lighter note, speaking of puppies and Anheuser-Busch, you know, came out with their own puppy commercial. You've got the Clydesdales going out and looking for the puppy, and it melted my heart a little bit. Made me want a puppy and a date with the guy that actually has the farm. What?
Wait, I have a question. This is a great point. Anheuser-Busch has been running these Clydesdales. We come to expect it, right? It's a staple of the Super Bowl. They're going to roll out their Clydesdale commercial. Is anybody else buying more Budweiser?
Exactly what, like, my point is, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why. Yeah, it's cute, and
look,
people talk about Budweiser, but
you
either like Budweiser or you don't like Budweiser. I mean, that's like one of the beers people either hate Budweiser or love Budweiser.
Oh, but they have such great commercials. But the puppy, look, he's going to get lost.
Well, and remember, I mean, and this goes down to your point from early on, you know, what ultimately is the objective here? It wouldn't surprise me if Budweiser, in putting an ad like that together, you know, is really trying to, you know, just remind existing supporters that it's still the great American brand that it's always been, or,
yeah,
you know, or even internal stakeholders or legislators. I mean, there's all sorts of people who, you know, are not necessarily the dominant audience in the Super Bowl, you know, viewing community that this ultimately is targeted towards or serves. Does it sell more beer? No. And maybe that's the mistake on our part or on the media's part of saying that's how we need to measure ads, is whether or not they sold more product. What would be refreshing is if Budweiser came out and actually told us why they were running these ads. I have no problem if they say, we're just reminding people that we're a great American brand, because that actually is, you know, something that's really helpful to us, or that's something that we get a huge, you know, philanthropic grant as a result of, or we maintain our tax status in the United States because we're a good American company and whatever. But whatever the reason, I have to believe there is a reason why they made that choice. Better not be to sell more beer, because I think, you know, we'd all agree that that's probably not, you know, going to be the end result. But that doesn't mean the ad's not valuable. It just means it's not valuable in the sort of basic traditional way that we currently measure.
You know, somebody in the chat room was talking about frogs sell more beer than puppies. I don't know about that, but I do remember the frogs. Okay, let's talk about connectivity. You know, one of the pet peeves I know that you've had in the past, Brian, is at the second screen, right? If you're at home, not a problem. You're on your phone, you're tweeting about the game, you're on Facebook as you're watching it, you know, maybe Don, you're at your Super Bowl party like you were talking about, which, by the way, I still need an invitation to one. But the people at the game having being connected, how's that changed this year?
Well, this is the first year, I said it before, this is the first year that NBC is going to stream the Super Bowl in full online for free. So it's not the first time that a game like the Super Bowl has been streamed, but it is now available to everyone who doesn't have the ability to get in front of a television. That's a big deal just in terms of increasing viewership. You mentioned Facebook, et cetera. I still think, you know, one of the most interesting things that I've read in the last week is apparently 70%, and I'm paraphrasing on the statistics, so somewhere in the neighborhood of 70% of people do not watch with someone else. They watch alone, or they watch with like one other person. They're watching in their home. They're not at parties. They're not at a bar. It's not a collective viewing experience. And so the idea of connecting, you know, is it has to be online, right? Because the TV experience that we are all sharing is not something that is, you know, multi-directional. We're not actually all commentating. We're not actually all in the booth, you know, talking to each other. So online has to be, you know, the way that we connect. I don't think, though, that even with all the second screen apps and all the, you know, sports apps and trash talking apps and all of that community stuff, and Don knows that stuff way better than I do, I still don't think that we've figured out what the second screen experience is for a game like this. And, you know, maybe my personal experience is different because as a Seahawks fan, I'm more deeply invested in this game than a Super Bowl where my team isn't playing. So maybe when my team isn't playing, I'm going to be more or less active in social media. And if I'm just casually sitting around the guacamole or whatever, you know, I'm going to have a different perspective. But all I think that we have seen set up are two dynamics. Either the here's a big giant open room, so you have to go figure out how to be social just like everybody else, which we know is very difficult for most human beings, or the you have a vested interest in this, so here are your stats or here's your, you know, team identity and go, you know, beat up the other team because we love competition. The human experience of being connected I don't think exists. And all we've done with more streaming and Facebook thus far is just make it possible for more people to be in the same room. It doesn't mean they're going to want to, and it doesn't mean they're going to do anything interesting.
Or if you're in the same room, you're disconnecting from the people that you're at an actual party with is the other thing. I mean, how many times are you in a bar any place? And I'm guilty of it, certainly. And you're looking down at your phone and you're checking Twitter. I think the hardest part, well, two things. I think the hardest part of just tracking games and major events like this is just that there's so much chatter going on that it's almost impossible if you're just looking at a general stream or even a hashtag to follow it. If you're hashtagging something Super Bowl, you know, the Super Bowl hashtag, it's not going to be seen. It's going to just fly by on your scroll. I mean, the conversation online, I think, is impossible to follow. I think it's more for people just throwing their little quips up there and trying to be funny. But for when you're actually in a room, it's kind of twofold. One, I think it takes away from the social element that is a Super Bowl party. But also what we talked about is that the Super Bowl attracts so many people that don't necessarily care about the Super Bowl, right? You don't have to be a football fan or a fan of the two teams to be watching, as Brian was describing. He's certainly much more invested, and certainly football fans are going to be a little more invested, but there's fans that don't even care about the sport that are going to be sitting in there. And I think this might give them a way to sort of engage in a way they might not otherwise be able to because they have the comfort of, you know, their devices in front of them.
And big data. What are we going to see? Do you think that we're actually going to gather any really interesting data that's going to make a difference and revolutionize the marketing and advertising world?
I don't. I think that every year we see, you know, some agency will put an infographic out about how this was the most. We will see a study that says this is the most social Super Bowl ever. But we saw that same report. Yeah. You know, the last 3 years, I would say we see it. So we'll see that, and there'll be statistics, but you're not breaking any ground. No, people are on social media while they're watching the Super Bowl. Well, thanks, Copernicus. You know, it's great. So I think more of the big data comes into play on that sort of advertising end of it, not who's engaged or what sort of those metrics look like, but how people are using those that are engaged to really, you know, micro target the audiences to reach maybe after the fact.
Well, and I think the one possibility of big data coming into play is if something actually happens. So when the lights went out a few years ago at the Super Bowl, it gave us a point inside this large, you know, social media sports event to compare against. There's nothing that is comparable to the Super Bowl, including last year's Super Bowl. Every year, you know, the more people are online and more people are watching, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, we need to have something happen in an event. And look, it's not exactly a big data example, but, you know, in Seattle, they've been measuring earthquake signals that are sent out when you know, a major event happens. And, you know, it's not in the context of measuring earthquakes and studying sort of the big data that comes out of earthquake experiences, it's very helpful to the scientists. So essentially, I feel like we need the media or social equivalent of an earthquake so that we can study and make sense of whatever big data happens. So who knows, maybe like there's a blackout, right? A grid fails and the power goes out in, you know, the middle part of the country or something. Like, let's measure what that does to, you know, people watching online on their phones. Or, you know, let's say something horrific happens on the other side of the world. Maybe there's a flood of people, you know, making charitable donations or, you know, calling their friends or et cetera, et cetera. Like, we need an event. We need a quote unquote earthquake in order to come up with sort of some big data analysis that I think is going to be different and meaningful.
But to your point, everything evolves, right? So that data that we have and that we'll be able to study isn't necessarily going to be applicable to any sort of future activity that, you know, that happens. That sort of capturing that moment, it's just that. It's that moment. So you take it, study it, but like you said, this Super Bowl can't even be compared to last year's Super Bowl. So if X, Y, and Z happens during this Super Bowl, well, how do we prepare that when it's not Super Bowl season, not Super Bowl during the game, or even next Super Bowl? It's interesting. It's newsworthy, but you know how useful is it? I'm not necessarily sure. I don't think it's not useful, but I'm not sure, you know, what to say about that.
We know what teams you like. Let's have our own little pool here. What's the score going to be? Heineken, an Anheuser-Busch, your favorite beer or something.
An adopted puppy.
Oh, puppy. Anthony.
Kidding,
Anthony's going to adopt that puppy.
Because I'm going to win, and I don't want a puppy. So I just a stuffed puppy, a stuffed animal puppy. Not a stuffed puppy, a stuffed animal puppy.
I want a real puppy. So okay.
You can get a real puppy if you win.
Okay. And a beer?
It's fine, but don't give it to the puppy because I feel like that's inappropriate.
That's a good point.
I say that as a parent, right? If I won it and gave it to my child, that would be inappropriate. I believe if you give a beer to your puppy, that would be inappropriate. But I'm not a dog owner.
So what's the score going to be? Go for it, Don. You go first.
27-24. Patriots.
Okay. Patriots. Yeah, that's right. And you, yeah. Brian?
I think it's 24-16 Seattle.
I say, I'm going to say 24-23.
Carry the one. Okay.
This is like Common Core.
Seattle.
Give me a math story.
Show your work. Yeah, that's what I say. Seattle. I'm a 12. Well, thanks, guys. This has been a lot of fun, and I'm excited to see the game. Whose Super Bowl party am I going to? Brian, Don?
I don't take it personally. I have to watch alone because it's way too stressful to watch your own team play in the Super Bowl. Like, I can't be social when other people want to, like, you know, make small talk. I have to, you know, dial in. It's nothing personal. It's just the way I am.
Yeah. You know, I've watched your tweets. You really get intense during the game.
If Seattle is not in the Super Bowl some year, and I don't know like when that'll ever happen, but if they're ever not in the Super Bowl, then we can totally watch together.
If they're never, don't know when that's going to happen. I love that hat, Brian. Thanks for wearing that.
Well, you are more than welcome to fly to the East Coast if the airlines are actually running and we don't get hit by another storm. But I'm actually taking it pretty easy this year, mostly just family.
And because you guys talked so much about guacamole, I think I'm going to have some for lunch. Oh, my God. It came up. I was like, it's a good thing that wasn't the drinking game. You guys kept saying guacamole. Didn't know that, but I was counting. If somebody wants to connect with you, Don, if they want to follow you or ask you questions or maybe just talk smack about the game, how can they do that?
Probably Twitter is the best way. Just HH Reynolds. That was, I'll give you another plug. My former blog that I turned into a Tumblr account was Hugging Harold Reynolds. You can Google that to figure out why it was called that, but became my Twitter handle and it stuck. But HH Reynolds on Twitter, hit me up.
Does Benny have his own blog or Twitter account or anything like that?
No, but now that you mentioned it, I might have to do that. You know what I do have? Check this out. Travelswithmonkey.tumblr.com. My daughter, actually it was the Super Bowl in Dallas. Before I left, I was doing a lot of traveling that month. She was about two or three at the time, gave me a little toy monkey, and he's been taking pictures with, there it is, famous athletes, famous places, all around. So the bull doesn't have one, but the monkey, has his own Tumblr account. And he,
oh, that's great.
What I do, it's kind of, people compare it to Flat Stanley, but it's kind of like I'll send it home while I'm away. Colorado, there's Cody Latimer, Broncos rookie, Rick Fox autographed it. That's Lucy the Elephant, jersey. I don't remember what that is.
Everybody, this guy looks really excited to be holding that monkey.
Yeah. What I do, though, is when I'm on the road, like I'll send this home to my wife, and she'll show my daughter, and aww, she'll get to tell her what daddy's up to while he's away.
That's sweet. I like that. And how about you, Brian? How can we connect with you?
Twitter's always good. It's just my name, @BrianReich. And I travel with a monkey from time to time, but I haven't done the kind of photographic coverage of it. So I feel left out. Sorry.
I'm just saying. Don's gonna.
But I'm a fan. I've watched Travels with Monkey many times. So.
And check out Brian's book too, by the way, Brian.
Yeah, Shift and Reset. You can go to shiftandreset.com.
I have it on my bookshelf back there somewhere.
Where? Let's see
it's
that.
It's on my bookshelf somewhere in there.
Oh, I see a flag. I see Benny. And is that booze back there? What?
Brian's book is on that bookshelf somewhere.
Under all the booze.
Anyway, right. The booze is personalized. Hold on.
It makes a great coaster. If that's the reason you buy the book, I'm totally fine with that.
What is that? Captain
HHR.
No, it's not. How cool is that? I want some.
That's why it's not opened.
With my guacamole.
It would be worse if there were like empty bottles of booze.
Yeah, we call you out on that for sure. Well, thanks guys for joining the show. I'm excited to watch the game and I'll be watching to see what you post about it. And we'll just see who wins. Who's going to buy me a beer and a puppy? Not buy me the puppy, adopt
send
a puppy.
It my way. Yeah. Send me the stuffed puppy.
I want a puppy.
Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks guys.
Thanks.
Absolutely. Well, that was fun. And whether you're a Super Bowl fan, maybe you just aren't really an NFL fan, or maybe you're not a fan of either the Seahawks or New England, but you actually want to watch the game with your friends, I recommend that you check out this episode in full if you just caught part of that. That was a lot of fun. You can follow me, actually. I'll be tweeting about it and watching the game myself at Tanya Hall Radio on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook by going to Tanya Hall on Facebook, or email me your suggestions. Thank you so much for all your emails at mavericks@twit.tv. You can download the show on iTunes. We're on YouTube. Or watch us every Thursday at 12:30 starting next week. That's 12:30 Pacific time, 3:30 Eastern time. Join the conversation live and join the chat room. We'd love to see you. Thanks, everybody. Until next week, have a good one.